To the Order to Three movie podcast, where this week we will be spoiling for you, if you have not seen it, Splice. Here to join me to talk about Splice is Christian McCroskey. Did I get that right?
You get closer every week. I pronounce it Ixworm.
Ah, okay, good. I'll get that better next time. We also have with us Kelly Wand. Kelly Wand, do you have a Splice-inspired tagline for us this week?
Yeah. What do you call a six-legged insect that can't speak? A mute ant.
Wow. That's good.
A little genetics comedy.
Six-legged insect. That's a little.
Got that song just now. Now I understand why you picked it. It took me that long.
That song actually does relate to what we've seen a little bit. Yes.
Vaguely. Yeah.
You could think of it that way. Kelly Wan, why don't you, for folks who might still be unclear about what happened in the movie, why don't you recount for us the events that occur over the course of Splicers?
So this is for people who saw it but don't understand what happened.
And for people who might be considering seeing it and who don't mind spoilers.
Oh, okay. All right, here's my splinopsis. So Adrian Brody and Sarah Pauly work at this place called Nerd, where they make these abominations with stinger tails so they can harvest their protein. But their dick bosses won't let them use human DNA because that'd be playing God or something. So Sarah Pauly does it anyway because her mom kept her in a closet with a habit trail in it. So they make this creature that keeps getting sick, but it's actually getting awesome and not sick. And she names it Dren because it's backwards for nerd. And they move it to the basement, and then they move it to a freezing-ass cold barn. And they teach it Scrabble and how to wear makeup and dance. And then they both have sex with it, but it kills everybody that hasn't impregnated, which makes Sarah Pauly's boss happy and give her tons of money. The end.
All right, well done, Kelly Wand. Good.
Did I leave anything out?
Where do you think they got? Did Dren make you guys think of Happy Days? Was that just me? You don't remember that episode of Happy Days where Potsy falls in love with Joni and he's her secret admirer, and he signs his notes to her, Dren. And in the big reveal is that Dren is nerd spelled backwards. You guys don't remember this. You weren't thinking of this the whole time you were watching Splicers.
Where did you look that up?
I'm watching the movie.
Ralph Mouth's nerdier than Potsy.
But isn't Potsy the one that Fonzie calls a nerd, or they call a nerd? And so when he's Joni's secret admirer, he's signing all of these like these love notes, Dren.
Weren't they all nerds except for Fonzie?
Wait, you're changing the subject. Nobody remembers that but me? You guys don't remember that? I would be sure you, Kelly Wand, would have remembered that episode of Happy Days. No?
I don't remember that. I don't remember Potsy and Joni ever hooking up. Well, I take it she didn't reciprocate.
No, it was, I think they agreed to be friends.
And so he would just watch Chachi and her, like, through the window.
A little creepy, isn't it? But that's where they used that whole Dren thing then. That was his.
So the director of Cube saw that episode and then incorporated it.
Could be. Yeah. That's just what kept popping up in my head. So anyway, I guess you didn't leave that out because you didn't know about it. You did leave out that Adrian Brody has one of the most amazing T-shirt collections ever worn by a young scientist.
He's hip and edgy.
So hip, like, so edgy. He's got anime posted over his bed.
Yeah.
A big old huge.
Who would win in a T-shirt fight between Adrian Brody and that dude from Losers?
Dude from Losers?
Chris Evans.
Yeah, like he had awesome T-shirts.
Ugh.
Wow.
Okay. Speaking of biological horror.
Speaking of the Losers. He had a pink one. What were the other ones? I think you're right, though.
I think
it's like that guy's hat on 30 Rock.
The Adrian Brody's t-shirt collection was far more awesome, I thought. And the movie was very proud of those t-shirts. They were very prominently featured. I think, as a matter of fact, I think that's where a large part of the movie's budget went, is the Adrian Brody's t-shirt collection. Those cannot have been cheap. They were all very edgy. The kinds of t-shirts Dingus would wear, like with your Ed Hart t-shirts.
Oh, how dare you. I think they spent a lot of money on computer monitors, too, don't you?
Some of those lab sets were pretty intricate looking. Some big computer.
And on sound effects.
I don't think there were any in this movie. Were there sound effects in this movie?
No, Dingus was doing one before the podcast. What was that?
Can you do Dren for us, Dingus? Can you make Dren noises? The Dren noises reminded me of,
that sounds like Kelly.
Their Dren noises reminded me of one of the most harrowing moments in all of cinematic history, and that's Andy McDowell doing a dolphin in the Hudson Hawk movies. Or movie, there's only one of them. Andy McDowell does a dolphin impression, and it's a horrifying moment.
I don't remember that.
Oh, God, don't do that. You're scaring me.
Dude, Hudson Hawk. Pones.
I'm not saying it doesn't. Talking about the sheer utter horror of Andy McDowell. I think she's drugged in the movie or something. She makes dolphin noises.
She says, "Do I look like a damsel in distress?" She's been hit by a dart. And she goes,
They are drugged. Yep. So.
Roofles.
All right, well, let's get down to brass tacks. Let's get down to brass tacks here. Kelly Wand, on a scale from Rosemary's Baby to It's Alive to Orphan, where would you put the Splicers?
Grudge 2.
Okay. Pretty low. Okay. Dingus, on that scale, where would you rank splicing?
That's too harsh. I retract it. The other.
Okay. I don't see the continuity, but all right, if that's where you want to put it.
There's a clone kid in it.
In the other? Are you thinking of others? Yeah. I'm thinking of the thing with Nicole Kidman and Fiona Flam. Christopher.
This is 70s before your time.
Ah, good. Good. You've gotten more obscure than me. I am impressed, Kelly Wand. What is the other?
It's like a dude, and he has like an evil twin, but I think it's his clone.
Okay. Is it horrible or good?
It's okay. It's a happy six. Like this. Splice is good up to a certain scene. There's one last great scene, and then after that, it totally jumps the shark.
Okay, hold that thought.
85%.
Okay, I want to know exactly what scene that is. Dingus, where would you rank splicing compared to other similar movies?
All right, I would rank it just a hair above The Fly, the opera, but just a hair below The Fly, the movie.
Ha! Just a hair below, because I would think you, Dingus...
What kind of hair?
...would think... Ooh, gross.
A fly hair.
Dingus, I would think you would think The Fly, the movie, is really quite good. So you're just ranking it a hair below a really quite good movie?
Well, a lot of hair.
I see.
Flies have a lot of hair.
They do, and they're thick and bristly, so there's a lot of distance there. Okay, good.
Good.
I would put it on par with the original It's Alive. And maybe slightly better than the recent CG-driven remake of It's Alive. Neither of which movie is very good. I thought splicing
that came
terrible.
Out.
It did come out. Yeah, there's a CG remake of It's Alive with a little. But it's a remake of It's Alive, and it's a little CG baby instead of the practical stuff that was in the. Is his name Larry Cohen? What's the guy's name that did all those movies? He did Q and It's Alive and the stuff with
The stuff with Garrett Morris.
Exactly.
My favorite black SNL cast member.
And that guy's name is Larry Cohen, right? The guy who...
I'll Google it while you talk over my
title. The phone booth guy.
Yes, I think he... Yeah.
Yeah, Larry Cohen, you're right. Michael Moriarty was in stuff, too.
Yep, he was. He was terrible. He was nowhere near. Like, he peaked in Q. Q is excellent Larry Cohen / Michael Moriarty collaboration.
Who did he play in the stuff? Was he Buzz Aldrin?
Oh, Dingus, you're so out of your element.
I'm embarrassed.
I am too.
I put Splice below. It's being compared to early Cronenberg, and I don't think it has. I don't think it's that.
It
good.
Wishes it was early Cronenberg.
I know. It's wannabe early Cronenberg.
All right. Well, Kelly, where does Dingus? Do you need to elaborate any further about where you would rank splicing?
I thought I did just
okay.
Fine.
I thought you did.
Yeah, I'm with you guys.
I don't understand what Dukas is saying about The Fly, though. Like, I don't know if he likes it or not, based on what
he's saying. It's not as bad as the opera of The Fly.
That opera rocked. What are you talking about? There were puppets. How come you didn't like that? What's wrong with
you? I was just making a joke. It's not as good as the movie of the remake movie of The Fly, is what I'm saying.
Which is a masterpiece, we all agree, correct?
The remake movie of The Fly? Sure.
Yes. All right.
I don't think it's a very good movie at all.
The Fly? How dare you?
No, The Fly.
All right, well, let's get
Kelly
into what's
wrong. Kelly doesn't like any movie that has the word the and then a word after it, so he can't like The Fly. He only likes Fly.
Now, I've been mucking around, but it's really just called Splice, right? There's no article or anything there. It's just Splice, right?
Of course, yeah. And spelled S-P-L-I-S-E.
Nobody knows what you're talking about.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a five-letter word, if I remember. Yeah.
Kelly Wand, where does Splice jump the shark for you? Where did you think it was an awesome movie up until?
My favorite scene, and there's a lot of good scenes in Splice, so I feel bad turning against it because I really loved their presentation to the shareholders. Scene.
That felt to me like it was out of a different movie, though. I almost thought it was a dream sequence. It was good. It was sort of like it was like a scientific presentation as a Gallagher show in a horror movie.
Right.
I loved that scene, and I wished it had been in a better movie. I mean, I really thought it was going to be a dream or something.
It was the best of two Gallagher scenes I've seen this year.
What was the other Gallagher scene you've seen?
Iron Man.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh, yeah.
I think Iron Man.
This is the year of Gallagher. Dingus is right.
All right, Kelly Wand, so that right there is where it peaked for you, Kelly Wand?
The last awesome scene, and you could tell the audience was with the movie still, especially the stoners, was where she walks in on them having sex. The sex scene. The second sex scene. And then everything after that scene sucks. Because that's the point at which, up until then, I wasn't sure where the movie was going, and I was kind of enjoying that sensation. And then after that scene, I go, I think I know what's going to happen, and then I was right, and bummed that I was right.
Oh, by she, you mean Elsa walking in. You don't mean...
Yeah.
Her. Okay. Yeah.
Sarah Polly walking in on Brody and her.
Brundlefly.
That's good. Brundlefly, yeah.
Yeah, I thought right there, I wasn't into the movie for most of it. It lost me pretty early. And at that point, I realized what I think the movie could have been to work. Because that moment where, you know, Adrian Brody is like balls deep in their mutual science project...
Yeah.
That moment was so completely over the top funny, but unintentionally so. I think.
Are you sure about that?
My audience was howling too, but I don't think the movie had any sense for how utterly absurd this moment was.
I don't know about that, dude.
Where else?
After the shareholders meeting,
right?
they're sitting at that conference table, and the guy goes, "Oh, that was a setback." So. The guy, they know the value of understatement.
See, I think
if they knew that moment was absurd, she would have stayed, and they would have had the good bad scene in the room with her there. She would have stayed there for the whole confrontation.
And that's the thing, like Kelly Wand, that's what I think sets this apart from a David Cronenberg movie. I think David Cronenberg is very aware of how outrageous this stuff is, and it plays it like it really plays it that way, and it's not winking, it's not pretending, it's not outrageous. And this movie didn't seem to really understand what it had or what even to do with it. I mean, the best movie, this kind of movie, and the reason I mentioned things like Rosemary's Baby and It's Alive and Orphan, there's another movie we've talked about called Joshua, is these are movies about the uncertainty of parenthood as a horror movie. And I think they're all aware that they're about that. But there are times that I think Splice is trying to be a moralizing movie about the power of science. And there are other times I think it's trying to be a sort of a Frankenstein monster allegory. I mean, it doesn't really have any consistent tone or through line.
No.
Or point.
But
so that when you get this hilarious, over-the-top, funny scene, it feels like it's come from another movie, just like the presentation to the shareholders where Fred and Ginger get splattered all over the audience. I mean, those two bits did not feel like they belonged in the early movie where, you know, these two hip young scientists are struggling with whether or not to have a child. And, you know, they're puzzling out all this. They're doing all this DNA exposition stuff. And then later there's a monster movie with running through the woods. I didn't feel any of this stuff fit with other stuff. It the movie itself was almost like a Frankenstein monster.
It made me laugh like 5 or 6 times, which is pretty good these days because my bar is so low now when I go to the movies. That if it made me, like, I liked the scene with the brother where it jumps his him when he comes in.
Right.
They ruined that character. I mean, and the boss too at the end.
Well, they were just there to be killed to show that Dren was indeed willing to be lethal. I mean, they were just basically bodies. They were
Richards.
And you don't even see how they die. It's pointless.
Yeah, that's true. They just get flown off and dropped into trees, don't they?
Yeah, exactly the same way from each other. Like, it may as well just be one of them.
Right. Yeah.
And
I don't think this movie has any idea what to do with things like, you know, the relationship between Adrian Brody and his brother. You know, that was his brother there, and it treats his brother just like his asshole boss. You know, there's nothing to really distinguish one character from the other.
It was kind of like Cube, where it's like I wanted to like it, and I liked a lot of chunks of Cube, but the characters kept ruining it, and that's kind of what happened in this movie, too. Like, he doesn't do characters very well.
Yeah.
But the pacing in the first half was pretty good, I thought. Like, there was a lot of stupid shit going on in this movie, like, really quickly. Like, she instantly start making it, like, right at, like, in the second scene. She's got her arm in there. There's up to a point, I think you're selling it a little short.
Well, see, that's...
I think you were into it longer than you had.
That's another point, Kelly Wand, where that should have been a sort of a funny Cronenberg equivalent of a C-section. You know, where they have to cut open the machine. And I'm not even sure the movie was that aware of what it had. It just wanted to do a vaguely scary thing where her arm gets bitten. I didn't get any sense that it was aware of the outrageousness of that scene. Maybe I'm wrong, though.
I don't know. I was giggling already. It was, this is all right. It's biting her. Right. I mean, it gets lamer the more human the creature gets, because then it becomes exactly what it winds up becoming. And then when it changes sex, that was the most predictable thing in the movie.
And the weakest, I thought.
Yeah. It's an angelic female and then a demonic male.
Right. So up to that moment, we're rooting, you know, at least as far as you can root for anything at that point in the movie, we're feeling more for her than we're feeling for these two asshole scientists.
Yeah. Yeah, who, they put her in a barn, right?
And they rape her, and there's all these horrible things going on. And either this is about bad parents or bad scientists, and it really can't be both, but it tries to be about both, which was annoying to me. But where the movie really pusses out is that for me, it, instead of like letting us just champion her, it switches her into a male and turns her into a rapist at the end, which I think is just a real weak ass thing to do. I just think it's so weak.
Well, we got it. Then its only words are inside you, and it's like a rape quote because it's twisting her words. Does that impress you?
See, that's the thing. I really think if it had been more aware of how it could have been a subversive movie about parenthood, that it could have pulled this off.
All right. Here's another ambiguous
absolutely,
scene.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
I want you guys' take on the scene where Adrian Brody is drowning the creature, and it turns out, and then it dies apparently, and then it starts breathing water like in the abyss.
Right.
And she goes, oh, it's amphibious. Right. How'd you know? He didn't mention that the whole time. And she goes, wow, did you know? And he goes, yeah, sure. And everyone in my audience cracked up at that. Like, he's lying. He thought he was killing it, but it backfired because then it breathes water. So do you think that was meant to be ambiguous?
I think that was so ham-handed and indicative of how the movie had no idea what to do with its characters. I mean, so at this point, our protagonist is basically a murderer.
Right.
A child murderer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it comes right after that scene where the brother goes, can't you ever say no to her? So you think, oh, he's finally saying no to her. He's going to drown this creature because he's had enough of it. And so he's going to make a point to Sarah Polly, like, no, we're killing this right now. But then it turns out he's just helping her.
And what's more, she's so dense that she doesn't even realize, you know, we as the audience know, oh, he was trying to drown it. Oh, that's funny. She's so dense she doesn't even catch that. Supposedly this guy she's married to, he just pawns off with a one-liner, yeah, I knew. And she doesn't
know it's worse than that. She gives him a look that suggests you knew that, didn't you? And there's a look between them like, did you just murder our child? Maybe
no,
I did, but
I don't know.
But they never revisit it.
Right. And that's an example, too, of how I just think a movie has no idea of what it's trying to do or what it could do or how this could be. You know, early on, I was like, okay, this is going to be a movie about a couple that gets pregnant and they're fighting about whether or not to have an abortion. And I was thinking, okay, this is a cool sci-fi twist on that. Let's see where this goes. And it didn't really, you know, I don't think it was even really aware of that, that it was trying to sound like that kind of movie. And so then it becomes a movie about raising a child, and then it becomes a movie about the child being sexualized. Like none of that really applied throughout. You know, I hate to do this, but I am going to mention a really, really bad horror movie I saw recently that I think Splice could have learned from. And I mentioned this to you guys. It's a movie with Kevin Costner called The New Daughter. And it's about a single father dealing with his daughter hitting puberty. And what do you do with that and how completely alien that is to the male experience. You know, that's what the movie, that's the subtext of the movie. But the way this horror movie presents it is that the daughter is taken over by this this sort of psychic hive of ant monsters near a house they've just moved into. And she becomes their queen. And it's a terrible, stupid horror movie. But unlike Splice, it is so consistent in that it's really about a father's confusion about his daughter hitting puberty. And I couldn't help but constantly think of this movie, The New Daughter, which is terrible, watching Splice. Thinking, you know, if have a cool concept, you know, be about abortion or be about child rearing, you know, when they're trying to feed it and they discover it just wants junk food. You know, oh, that's funny. It's sort of like this idea of parents trying to make sure their kids eat right. And it just it has little flashes where it touches on these potentially cool sort of not metaphors but other things it could be about, and it just skips over them, I think, unwittingly without even really appreciating what it's got.
Man, it sure does that, because every time they went back to their apartment, I thought, why the hell are you guys at your apartment?
Yeah.
Why? I mean, either if you're bad parents, you're bad parents, or you're good scientists. You're not both in this movie. One of you is going to be at that laboratory 24/7, or not. And or you're going to be good scientists, and you're going to get rid of this thing. But both of them would just be lying in bed, not even doing anything useful, just lying in bed, and then the computer calls them. Really, you guys are just going to leave this experiment in the lab and just go home?
And the funny thing is, Dingus...
They have a computer nanny.
The funny thing is, Dingus, they're aware of that later in the movie because they set up that Sarah Pauly has to pretend to be sick not to come into work. So it's like later on in the movie it decides to do that, but it's just so sloppy with when and where it applies what points it's trying to make.
But when she's sick, she just curls up on her bed in the house. I mean, they have this moment. These two carry this experiment around in cardboard boxes. It escapes when they get to this barn that she's never told anybody about and runs off into the woods. This is what everyone's warned us about. They catch it, they put it in the barn, leave it alone, and go back into the house. There's no sense at all of... This is the biggest scientific discovery in all of mankind, and we have to monitor it like you would monitor a baby at all moments. No, they just throw her in the tub.
Plus
it's
an unpredictable being that seems to keep getting out, and they put it in like this like decrepit, dilapidated barn. But she gets out of repeatedly.
It can sprout wings at a moment's notice, but what else could it do? I could just leave it in the barn with a padlock.
Yeah,
and a skylight.
Remember that movie Evolution? David Duchovny.
Good Lord, yeah. What, I can't wait to hear where you go with this.
Because remember they evolve wings, and then they evolve oxygen breathing and that? And it's just about giant amoebas with buttholes, and they put shampoo in it. It's kind of like this movie. What were you saying? Before I said buttholes, was your name?
Well, that's where I don't know. Tom brought up the nude something. What was the name of that? The nude what?
The new daughter, as opposed to the...
Oh, the new daughter. Okay. And what I was thinking, because I just saw it for the first time within the last couple of weeks, and Tom, you brought this up at the beginning when you were asking Kelly to rate this, was Rosemary's Baby. Mm-hmm. And I just really love that movie because of what happens at the end. I mean, the end really just... It's so... perversely charming, and early on in this movie I thought, oh, okay, well this is like what happens if Rosemary's Baby continues, but they don't really do anything with that, anything real. And I don't have, and most importantly for me, I don't have a sense of how much time is elapsing to really understand what's going on emotionally with this creature's development and their development with this creature, who is there for all intents and purposes their daughter, and then they get sexually involved with. And yeah. I want to have some sense of environment and time marching forward. And when I got the sense early on that there was this Rosemary's Baby kind of thing, I just felt totally betrayed when this is just smashed. They just don't have – you're right, Tom. You are absolutely right. They have no idea what they have or what to do with it.
At one point – and this is a – there are a couple of these, but I don't think the movie even understands its characters or knows enough. Like we talk about Adrian Brody drowning the baby. When Sarah Pauly, because Dren kills the cat, suddenly decides, okay, and then threatens her with a little stinger, okay, I'm going to strap her down, I'm going to rip her clothes, I'm going to dehumanize her and cut off her, sort of almost like this ritual clitorectomy or something. I mean, not that. It's almost like a circumcision. Like, it's almost like, I don't know if they were doing, like, if they were going for that kind of metaphor, but for suddenly, because the cat gets killed, and because she lashes out with a stinger, Sarah Pauly just randomly flips to be this ruthless scientist who's going to dehumanize this creature. That made no sense to me at that point.
Well, there's also
she had issues with her mom.
There's also an element of jealousy because of the pictures of the drawings of Adrian Brody, and she says, "Are there any of me?"
But so you think that's what spurred? Now I think what Kelly Wand is getting at with her background with her mom, like we that was laid out there, but that didn't seem like abrupt to you, like the movie didn't even understand its own character, because I didn't understand why she did that. I didn't understand why she suddenly became so ruthless and intent on dehumanizing Dren at that point.
They're both just the worst scientists ever, and those are their motivations, consistently.
There are suggestions of mental instability in her family. I mean, Adrian Brody says something about if you don't understand crazy, that's what crazy is. And they're talking about her mother being crazy. And then you have that, and this is what made me first think of Orphan, is those drawings, and she asks, it's done in a very shorthand way. So she asks, are there any pictures of me? And then at the end, there are pictures of her, which is supposed to be a cue to us that it's switched to be a male. So the pictures are sort of what she's cluing into. There's sort of a jealousy thing there, and that's what flips her.
So you think that moment, that flip was earned? Because I felt it was totally unearned.
Oh, I don't think at all, but I could see.
None of it was earned.
Going.
It was just another twist in the Lost-esque jigsaw they read themselves into.
And I think if you're going to have that moment, and for me, this is what really annoyed me about any of the apartment scenes, just drove me up the wall, because I've been around a newborn and know you just don't go off to your apartment and let your newborn just sort of sit there. But if Adrian Brody has to come in on that torture scene and just stay there for it, and that's an interesting transition there. At least it's sort of interesting. He comes in, she leaves with a cooler and walks out to go do her experiments, and he has to stay there. When she walks in, the corollary for that scene is her walking in on them having sex. And I think she should have to stay there instead of getting to run off and drive off in the gremlin, which is, I guess, a joke by the filmmaker calling it having them drive a gremlin around. But
is it a gremlin or a pacer, Dingus?
Oh, is it a pacer?
I think for this.
That's even. It's a pacer. Thanks, James Cameron.
But you're right. Go ahead, Dingus. She should definitely have to stay there. It should be like she should be there.
I think she should have to. She should have to stay there, and he runs off, and she should have to pick up the pieces, or they should have to have that parent fighting moment there in front of Dren, and have that be a part of her development. But they don't care about any of that. Instead, she gets to run off, and they have this scene over in this apartment. Why does that apartment even exist? So fucking annoyed. I'm sorry to say that word. I was so annoyed with that apartment. Just completely annoyed with it.
We don't even know how far it is from the barn. Like, is it across the state even? Is it like
3-hour drive?
It might as well be.
Is there any line better than, it's your DNA, I could tell?
Because he's dancing with me. He can tell from the neck. That's the part of the DNA she inherits.
There is one line better than that, and that's one of my audience lines, and that's a couple of dudes walking out, and one of them said to the other, "What is human DNA anyway?"
Ah,
that's the question, isn't it, though?
What? And that made them walk out? That was the part they got stuck on?
No, that was at the end. These two guys were just sitting there talking and waxing poetic about how great the creature effects were.
I would have hit that too.
Well, for me, when the little baby Dren is being gassed, all I could think of were those dancing baby things that you saw on YouTube 5 years ago. I'm not saying it's bad animation, but it didn't strike me as overwhelming.
I actually liked my favorite part of the movie was, because I had no idea that the movie was going to be about the creature growing up, and I thought the entire movie was going to be about that little hairless turkey bird slash rabbit with catfish feelers on its nose. I liked that little guy. I wanted to see a movie about that. And so when it then fast forwards to Dren, played by a little girl in a blue dress, that was really unsettling to me. I had no idea that was coming up, and that was an instance where I'm so glad that I don't watch trailers. Because even the movie poster, by the way, shows the full-grown Dren with her tail sticking out in a blue dress.
This is why I don't like to look at posters.
I'm with you there, too.
Spoilers.
Well, that's why I'm complaining so much about Passage of Time. Did you guys have a feel for that?
Well, there was science mumbo-jumbo about she's accelerating.
They kept saying she's great. But then the boss is going, we need the protein by this quarter. It's all over. So they had 3 months to make a profit off protein. Because that's how that kind of stuff works in genetics. You have 3 months to invent a new compound, or you lose billions of dollars, and that's it.
I love...
Was that old woman the woman from Videodrome, by the way, who, like, hits on James Woods?
That would be awesome if it was. I actually liked that old woman. That was one of the few...
She'd be very beautiful, Max.
That was one of the few crazy casting decisions that I was on board with. I was like, whatever everybody else is doing in this movie, bring out that old woman with the thick accent.
Yeah, she was great.
Like, she's inhuman, like the inhuman boss.
I thought she was going to end up being, like, a replicant or something.
Another part. Remember the part where Adrian Brody hears the baby in the vent, but no one else can hear it? And even though they can't hear it, he turns up like that. It's all...
And he even points out, and he says something, too, like, oh, I love this song.
Yeah, and everyone in the office goes, yeah! Like, all these scientists all love that one song.
It's not even the music we're actually hearing.
Right, right. It's
in the early
pure...
part of the scene, we're hearing a different song, and then he cranks up this other thing.
Yeah. It's random Foley track number 492. When they mix the movie, the guy just, put this.
And that's something, too, that early on I so hated this movie, is I miss a time when scientists could actually be old people. And Kelly Wan, you talked about this once when you were writing about The Thing. In The Thing, all the people, I mean, they've got Childs, or is it Windows? Anyway, there's a couple of young dudes.
Well, for Brimley.
But right. Those guys are like old, middle-aged, and they're not even...
And it's punched in the face.
But they're like old guys. Yeah. I love that. I recently watched, I say recently. Last
and
few
Alien
years,
also.
In Alien, in the last few years, I saw the original Andromeda Strain, and they're all completely, you know, I don't even think any of them are famous actors. You know, this idea that you have to cast, like, young, hip people as scientists, it's just so grating. I mean, it's such a product of the dot-com trend, is it?
Man, I could be a red shirt in a horror movie, just like that brother character. I'm just blind.
But there are a few times they were trying to talk science, and it just felt so just forced. I just didn't buy anybody as a scientist in this movie. None of that worked for me.
It's weird, because in the Cronenberg movies, like Jeff Goldblum doesn't say anything that sciency in The Fly, but somehow he makes it work. Like, he just doesn't think in terms that you can understand, so he's not going to even waste his time with you.
Well, and that's part of the beauty of like, really good movies. Like, The Fly isn't trying to actually make you think there's a real science here. It's a plot. That whole teleportation thing, it knows, is a plot device. It really wants to get on with the business of being about Jeff Goldblum's transformation and decay and his you know, his mind falling apart. It knows this is the priority. This is the thrust of the movie. This is what we're getting at. So all this early mumbo-jumbo that's trying to convince us that these two people know stuff about DNA and it's trying to create, I guess, just Like, they do these little pictographics for the different animals and the DNA ladders and all of that. It's just it's just so chintzy. And you don't need I think.
In The Fly, science was a big part of the end of the story, because when he fuses with the telepod, like, that's a science fiction-y kind of thing to happen.
And they,
like, the tragedy is science-based.
Yeah, and then and the stuff...
They stab it with a stick, and that's how they finally kill it, even though it's come back to life 900 times already.
Well, you know, this is a really great point, actually, Tom. And what I thought during this was that I don't care about any of the characters. And what for me I kept thinking about as the film went on was and why your music selection at the beginning of this podcast made me a little nervous that you might really like this movie was the one chance that I would get to use the movie quote you hate the most, which is this is no moon. And
what?
I'm listening.
and how I could feel like, you know, last year Moon was my favorite sort of science fiction.
Ah, that stingus. Come on. You got to give it up.
Well done. Well played.
Well, given what you chose as music, you got me a little nervous.
It really was no moon.
And this is no moon because I don't think Moon really bogs itself down in explaining a lot of the science to us, which a lot of people, you know, go back and forth on threads about, well, what does this mean? Why is this? And which is a great thing for discussions, but not necessary for what these characters mean to us. And all that does is sort of get in the way and sound like they're eating something while talking.
The funny thing, have you guys seen Primer?
Toast. No.
Primer.
Is it about paint?
Might as well be. Primer's a sort of a science fiction-y, science fiction. It's a science fiction movie that opens with a lot of the basic character development is just characters doing technical science talk that nobody in the audience is going to understand. And you get this sense of a fly on the wall watching these people work. And that's a great way to do it. You know, it's not there as exposition. It's there as character development. You know, let's watch these guys. It's almost like listening to Paul Giamatti talk about wine and Sideways. You don't have to understand the terminology that he's using to understand what it's telling you about this character. And Primer does that. Early on, you're just watching these guys do their science talk, and they're talking about the technology they're researching and the company they're starting up. And it kind of makes no sense, but it's another language, and all the subtext comes through. And I love that take on it. But this stuff here, where I just know it's just dumbed down, cheap stuff, to try to give the movie some sort of plausibility that you don't even really need. If you've got a good conceit or premise, just run with that. Don't give us some gobbledygook talk to try to convince us that there's something legit there. I don't think we need that.
Especially in a scene that would otherwise be a montage scene.
They did have, wasn't there a science montage? I think I had in my notes something about a science montage.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Error.
Right.
Then they're both like, then there's the inevitable tired of this won't work. Oh, wait, it does work. Just by chance, the 9 millionth try, even though he did this. And they're always surprised. Like, that's how inspiration in science works. Like, really?
She ran off and grabbed some of her DNA and threw it in there.
Aha.
What I started to feel, and I don't know if you guys, either of you had this sense, but I think this would have been helped immeasurably had it been a found footage film, because I think it had a lot of opportunity for that. There was a lot of sort of natural, we're recording everything, we're checking on everything. And if they had done that instead of all this other crap, then you would have had an opportunity to have some of those scientific moments and just sort of, you know, flash them in and out. But I think it would have worked a lot better as that. I don't know if you can do that right now, because of Paranormal Activity, but I think it would have been a better film that way.
No, now's the best time to do it. And it taps into your curiosity about what the creature is, too.
Yeah.
Which seemed lost in the shuffle. Because you go, oh, it's just an actress with a CG face.
Who was very pretty. And by the way, I thought the creature got... I thought Dren got to be far too pretty.
It was... She was so unsettling at first. So I think the idea is... I wonder how... I think that was intentional, Dingus. I don't want to, like, early on, it does look like a hairless turkey, and then her head starts coming together and her eyes get closer together. I mean, I think they intentionally made her more and more sexualized and attractive.
They had to.
Yeah, they.
From
yeah.
the big plot.
But you're right. She did get to be. Oh, look, that chick's probably a model. I mean, that was sort of the sense I got. And I also the actress I wasn't that convinced by either. Like that's I think of Jeff Bridges as Starman. You know that she was doing those little head things and there's a great opportunity there for an actor to play something that's not entirely human, and I just didn't feel this poor woman was really up to that. She just looked like some cute model cocking her head and having the little chirping Foley sound playing over the scene.
But I'm thinking, I think you're right, and I got to feel that too when she's doing all those quick little movements. It felt very much like, okay, quick, come up with an animal characterization.
Right. You know, you're a bird.
You're a chicken. Yeah. Yeah. But if she had not gotten to be more pretty, like if you think of the way the toddler version of her looked, or however old that the first leap forward was, with the sort of the bisected head and that which started to close as she got to be more the model later on. If she had been a little more alien looking, then when we go into him looking at her neck and getting aroused by her. Moment when she and then she kisses him and they move forward. Isn't that more effective if she's this strange thing that he's still attracted
Absolutely.
To it, rather than she's this attracted, sexualized female?
And I think that's just an example too of the movie just not really being capable of being as subversive as it could have been. Yeah, that's not going to happen until she's like an attractive model looking.
She was 3 months old, but she had the body of a 6 month old.
Right, and also, what if at the end he's the one pregnant instead of her, or
yes.
he's in a coma and pregnant, and she's controlling, and Elsa is sort of making the deal with the pharmaceutical company or whatever. I mean, that's no reveal when you're behind her with the camera. Except for the dude two people over who's like, whoa, and they pull into her body. Really, you didn't know she's pregnant, honestly?
And the boss doesn't care that she's pregnant? The boss isn't like, interesting.
I love that's a great example, Dingus. Like movie reveals that aren't reveals to anybody, but they're really stupid.
Yeah. Oh, you shoot her from behind, pregnant. Purgatory. Yeah, but you're supposed to be concentrating on what the woman's saying about how it's a generous offer and patents and stuff.
And you know,
that's supposed to trick you.
Yeah.
Except I was already annoyed by that sort of, we're going to switch him to a male so that you don't feel sympathetic.
Sad when he dies. Yeah.
Now here's something I was talking to someone about. Why does Dren kill Adrian Brody when Sarah Pauly is looming over her with a rock about to smash her head? Why doesn't Dren pop Sarah Pauly with the stinger at that point?
Or both of them.
Yeah. Why? I mean, that seemed to me like somewhere the script just decided that it was mandatory that Adrian Brody has to die. And so, okay, Dren is going to use her stinger to kill the person who's not threatening her, who she didn't kill when, or he didn't kill when he got pulled into the water. Like, none of that finale made any sense to me.
He has to kill the other males that can be genetically viable. I mean, there's that.
But he doesn't, though. When he gets pulled into the water, by the way, another one of my favorite lines, when Adrian Brody insists that they fish the flashlight out of the water by saying, here's what's the line, God, we need that.
Yeah,
it's like, that's good. You need the flashlight, really. See, I like that explanation, but it doesn't make any sense when Dren had just pulled him in the water and then let him go. Why didn't Dren kill him then? It just, all that was so sloppy, and it again made me think of the finale for Orphan, where all of the elements are in place and they tie together so well. And, you know,
the dad also
the lake,
does.
The gun, the father, you know, all that stuff. That, like, Orphan, just all these elements that were introduced were so carefully built into the ending. It was positively Hitchcockian. And Splice, it just didn't know what to do. You know, they're fumbling around in the woods and the flashlight falls in the water and the dudes get dropped in the trees. And for some reason, the stinger kills Adrian Brody. All of that was just so sloppy.
Why is she hiding in the water anyway, if she's not...
Right. I guess she needed to take a breather.
Breathe.
Amphibia. Yeah. I don't know.
She's
Her amphibious lungs. And there's so much here that could be used. Yeah. Especially, I really liked this idea. There's this moment where, right before the drowning, where Dren has a fever. And these two new parents don't know what to do. They're these scientists, and she's got a fever. We have to take her someplace. Where are we going to take her? And I loved the frenetic activity of that, both from the point of view of new parents and from the point of view of scientists who have set something in motion that now they don't know how to control. I like that aspect of you know, because we don't think about that when it comes to the idea of splicing genes. You know, we laugh at people who say we're going to outlaw human hybrids, but we don't think about, well, what happens if that human hybrid gets sick, and where are you going to take that human hybrid? And I know this is going to sound ridiculous, but my mind went to the oil spill that's going on. We've got these things that we create in this technology we set in motion, and now we don't know what to do when it gets out of control. And I liked that. I liked that feel of they don't know what to do now that it's gotten out of control, other than to put it in a cardboard box and take it out to a barn. And
that's what they're doing with the oil spill.
Well, that's not far off. We're going to throw a gigantic cement cap on top of it. And I think they could have done more with that. But like Tom has said over and over again, they just didn't have any sort of focus as to what they had and where they were going to go with it. And that was so frustrating to me, because there are things here that can be used and can be valuable. And if you're just going to make a horror film, then just make a horror film. But I think you can put follow these thoughts.
Oh, it's BP. Thanks, Vincent Nathalie. So before we do the 3x3, Kelly Wand, mention another line from Splice that was awesome.
She goes, yeah, she's just hungry. And he goes, maybe she wants meat. And she goes, she doesn't eat meat. And he goes, oh, rabbit's a vegetable now? And then she goes, that was an accident.
Okay, good. I hope we didn't spoil, if you're just tuning in late, I hope we didn't spoil the splicers for you. Let's do a 3x3. Are we done with talking about the Splicemeisters extraordinaire?
Unfortunately.
Which they are called at one point. All right, this week's 3x3. Whose was this? Good Lord.
You know what? I apologize. Now that I look at my list, I retract my enthusiasm for this being good.
Don't apologize. I had a blast doing this.
No, you didn't. Okay.
It's just bad. Introduce it for us, Kelly Wand. What was your inspired 3x3?
What I thought would be a good idea for 3x3 was three video game movies that should exist instead of the ones that do exist, like Doom and Super Mario Brothers and the upcoming World of Warcraft, which I think is a horrible idea for a movie. So these are better ideas for movies based on video games, which I thought would be fun for 2:45 and Tom, not Dingus so much, or me.
Well, Kelly Wand, I've got something to say. I'm going to wait till it's my turn, though. So Dingus will be introducing this week, so Dingus will go first. So Dingus, you think this was a good idea for – you didn't mind this list. You were okay with it.
I didn't like it at first because I'm an idiot when it comes to video games, as will become readily apparent as I do my list. But working on it this week, I actually quite enjoyed it.
Yeah. Okay, I have a few choice words for you, Kelly Wand, but I'm going to wait. So Dingus, what within was your number three? Kelly Wand, is it fair to put it this way? Video game – I'm just trying to think of a concise way to put it so it fits into a subject header. Video games that should be movies instead of the ones that are?
Sure.
Okay. I don't even know if that's going to fit, but that's what...
Just video games that should be movies, because
we're supposed to provide...
Go ahead, Dingus, what were you saying?
Sorry.
We weren't supposed to provide replay... I wasn't supposed to say this video game shouldn't exist and this one should exist.
Right.
All right.
I think we all agree. I'll just find some way to be concise with it. But you're starting us off. So, Dingus, what do you got for us? What's your number three video game that should be a movie? Oh, and Kelly Wand, you did mention, I'm not sure I can do this, but you did mention that you wanted us to sort of present it as pitches.
Yeah, but don't worry
about
that.
Okay. We may or may not do that. So
it's hard enough just even saying a word or two. this one. Ding. Spoiler alert.
Ding it, start us off. What do you got?
Okay, well, what got me excited about this as I thought about it was I went ahead and came up with directors and stars for the films as well as a way of pitching it. Mm-hmm. So so for my first for my number three, my elevator pitch for somebody who doesn't know video games at all and would be this: a kick-ass flower saves the world.
Ah, I like it. I like this. I like the title "Elevator Pitch" too for a video game, by the way.
And on the poster, I'm going to put "I love him not."
And that's pretty good. I would make that. How much? What's your budget? I'll be the executive. $10. All right,
you're going to only be able to download it, though.
You'll fit right in with our monkeys.
And it will only play on your PS3. I apologize.
Mm,
all right, so my number three obviously is the video game Flower. I'm going to have Duncan Jones direct it, the gentleman who did the film Moon. And starring in this, I'm going to have Chloe Moretz. And the basic idea for this film, it's going to be kind of a poetic film. There's not going to be a lot of dialogue in it. And it's kind of a post-apocalyptic idea for a movie. And sort of like the idea of if you took the plant from WALL-E and made a movie from that plant's point of view. Like that plant is having a dream and imagining that it is Chloe Moretz kicking ass and saving the world.
Because that stuff doesn't happen in the video game Flower.
It does not.
See, so you're kind of embellishing. Okay, good.
Yeah, well you have I have to sell it to this dude because he's not going to buy just pedals.
Yeah. You heard how cynical I sounded, Tom, with my cigar in my mouth.
But seriously,
I can get that big feeling from anybody.
I'm not just being an idiot here. The video game Flower, which you introduced me to, Tom, made me feel really good. I think emotionally it has a great hook to it. And I think that can be translated to film. And I think there's a way to do that. And so I would like to see that happen. So there you go. There's my number three.
Good.
Flower.
Good. I actually entertained
Chloe Moretz. So, yeah.
Chloe Moretz is too busy, though, doing the Let Me In remake.
We don't even talk
about
that.
Yeah, let's pretend that doesn't exist.
We're going to knock this out in a couple of weeks, really.
I like your pitch, Dingus.
I like your pitch, too. I wonder. Okay, good. I like that.
Go ahead, Tom. What do you wonder?
Well, so is this animated? Like, are you actually doing live action then? I'm genuinely curious. Well, like, how would you take Flower and apply that to a movie? I mean, Flower is a game. It's a remarkably – it's brief. It's self-contained. It's very poetic. It looks great. It's very streamlined. How would you present this as, like, a live-action movie, or are you just kind of being facetious about the whole thing? Or I'm just curious. Do you really envision, like, a Flower movie, or do you just want to see a movie try it?
No, I'm not just being facetious, and I think it can be both. I think that what I envision is not too dissimilar to the way that the game works, in that there are sort of two different worlds. You've got the world of the windowsill, and you've got the world of the game. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you're sort of in the world of the flower, and it's not going to be exactly the way the video game works, but imagine that little plant or one little flower left, imagining how to save the world. And then when that flower is dreaming of saving the world, it becomes this girl who is this learning power in the world, who finds a way to turn back time or save the world. And in that part of it, it's almost like a post-apocalyptic, but just a little girl, mm-hmm. like a little girl and her flower rather than a boy and his dog or a Book of Eli kind of thing. She's in the world and she's learning as she goes, but she's a real little girl in a real world. But the colors might be a little bit hyper-realistic. Like, I haven't seen it, but what I think about is the images I've seen from What Dreams May Come. So maybe it's a hyper-realistic colors, but a real person in that world sort of turning back time and changing the world. So that maybe it all exists within the dream of this flower, but it does save the world by turning back the clock.
You didn't see What Dreams May Come? That surprises me.
I didn't. I watched Hamlet instead.
All right, good. I like that thing. I'm sold. I don't know.
You just put a lot of thought into it.
You did.
Now you're gonna look.
I'm a little worried about how big it's going to open, though. I don't know that.
That doesn't matter.
Hold up against
Arch Forever
3D. Or
no, we're gonna. We have more of a strategy like Moon had, so that we're gonna open it in festivals, and then see if we can build word of mouth from there, and then gradually build it over the course of the
year.
Okay. Then people start saying, "This is no flower."
No.
All right, good. Well, my number three, actually, before I do my number three, tell you what, I hated this list until I actually started thinking about it. Now, let me tell you, here was the deal. Video games are so informed by movies. There aren't many video games I could think of that should be movies, because most video games are already basically based on movies. There's just so many video games are just so creatively derivative, if not outright bankrupt. I was scanning my shelves of games thinking, this is just a stupid list. But, Kelly Wand, this is an opportunity, though, for me to highlight some games that do things that I don't think movies have done that movies could do. So I really like the three that I came up with as examples of ways that movies could learn from certain video games. So ultimately, I hated this at first, Kelly Wand. I now like it. I like my list.
See?
So I'm going to parade you around on my shoulders after this podcast is over.
And all it took was me hating it all along.
But
I'll put you up. You'll have two shoulders. I'll put you up there, too.
All right, Kelly, hop up. Get up here, Kelly. my number three is Portal, because we get so many so this ties a little bit into Moon, but we get so many movies about, like, rogue AIs. That's such a sci-fi trope. The twist that Portal brings to it is it's a love story between the protagonist and this sadistic but somehow also maternal AI that has the protagonist imprisoned and is running experiments on her. And it plays out like a sort of a darkly humorous love story. It's a very tightly contained setting. There's a game called...
It's like Darkseed.
It is like Darkseed, but imagine Darkseed with a lighter touch, where the AI is actually a little neurotic and just lonely. And it works, too, with this... you don't have to use Portal's little space-bending trick where the gun shoots two points and they connect through a little dimensional portal. You don't need that. I'm thinking more of the writing in Portal and how GLaDOS is the name of the AI was presented and the relationship with the mute test subject. I just love that twist on the standard rogue AI trope. So Portal is my number three pick. And I didn't think of casting because, frankly, I don't think you could change it. The woman
you did not know.
The woman who voiced GLaDOS in the game, I think her name is Ellen McLean, is so good. And they don't even they tweak her voice a little bit to do some electronic stuff, but for the most part, she's so expressive. And GLaDOS is such a you see her at the end of the game, and she's an assemblage of these really sleek, clean. She's almost like Eva, but with all these arms and stuff. So I don't think you need to change it from actually what's in the game. I love the woman who voiced GLaDOS, and I wouldn't. If there were a movie of Portal, that couldn't change. So
would you keep the heroine mute?
You know, that's such a video game convention. As I was thinking about this, I was thinking about things like Half-Life, where the protagonist doesn't talk, and there's something about that because it drives GLaDOS. You know, the protagonist can't respond to GLaDOS. You know, GLaDOS really wants some kind of reaction and some kind of acknowledgement. And part of what makes the game work is that she never gets it. You can't say things back to her. You know, the tragedy of GLaDOS is she's stuck in a monologue. You know, she can't talk to somebody because all the protagonists are mute. So, no, ideally I would not want to change that.
I always thought that's a very strange video game convention.
The protagonist
having a mute, yeah, where you play someone who's mute and people just ignore that you're mute all the time. That seems very strange and forced to me.
It's even stranger.
Whenever I write games, it's always a snag.
Right.
You can't say anything. Why? You're right there.
Well, and it's even stranger, Kelly Wan, when as the games go on, as is the case with Half-Life, they have to joke about it. You know, they have to say, people have to come up to the protagonist and say things like, oh, you're a man of few words. Nudge, nudge.
Yeah.
You know, when it calls attention to how awkward it is, it's even stranger. But I do appreciate how it works in Portal. And Portal, like Flower, is such a small game in the sense of sort of scope and how long it takes to play and experience it.
Well, Portal 2, her muteness is part of the character, like you said. Like, she's refusing to give the computer the satisfaction. Right. So it's making the computer insane. The silence is a big plot point.
Exactly, yeah.
Because Eric Wolpaw is a genius.
That he is. That he is. And I will not let this movie be made. As a matter of fact, my in order to green light this, we need Eric on board.
Yeah, so. Agreed.
All right, so there's my...
Does he listen to this stupidness?
Well, we'll send him a link.
It's probably too cool for listening to
this. He might be. Huh? They probably are keeping him very busy over there at Valve.
I respect that. All right.
All right, Kelly Wand, what is your number three?
All right, this is my crappy one, so we'll just, like, pass over it, and then my number two, Pones, and then my number one sucks. All right. My number three...
That's the chick parabola, I believe.
Yeah. First stage, denial. Second base, second stage. Wait. All right, my number three movie recommended by other movie with They Don't Kiss based on a video game is Roller Coaster Tycoon. But only the way I play it, where people keep dying on these rides that I have weird names for, like Uphill and Far Away and Come Die on Me and I'm Red Like Your Blood, and then they keep getting back on the rides, like with a couple minutes of silence. And George Siegel's a cop and someone's bombing them. And it's Timothy Bottoms, and at the end he gets run over by one of the rollers.
Will this movie have sense around?
No.
All right.
That's my pitch, including that last part.
Kelly Wand, did you see, I think it was the third Final Destination?
I've seen them all. It was the pre-Final Destination. That was a great scene, actually.
Yes.
I like.
Yeah, it was.
The penultimate destination.
And Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
I don't know who that is.
But then the fourth one sucks. Spoiler.
It really does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see? Oh, yeah.
I've seen all of them. I've seen, if there's a Final Destination out there, I've seen.
But they're making another one because that last one made tons of money.
Is that true? So there is it? Is it?
It's going to be a final destination.
Right. At some point, can't we sue them for saying it's Final Destination?
False app.
Remember the first movie where people died and they actually grieved for them? The other characters, like, oh, man.
That's kind of before it became just slasher.
And then the fourth movie, everyone dies. Anyway, guy's dying in a pool right beside me, whatever.
Well, we have a friend, I think it was Aaron, who wanted to sue the makers of Neverending Story.
Because it does end. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Jerks. That Wolfgang Peterson. Always misleading me.
It should have been called Ending Story.
Two.
Yeah.
Dingus, what is your...
Right, that's my number.
That's good. What is your number two, Dingus? Video game that should be a movie.
I got a good from Tom.
I like that. I mean, it's a horror movie, right?
No, it's a psychological thriller. It's a totally different concept.
Wait, is it going to be... your movie's going to be R-rated because you think all movies should be R-rated, right?
Yes. Yeah. Or N-A, better yet. Yeah. R-rated in a... Pollyanna Society, maybe.
No, I don't think we can sell it as anything but a horror movie. Your Roller Coaster Tycoon, the horror movie.
They sold Splice as a love story.
Did they really? Are you lying?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm talking that much. Sorry.
Why would you want your movie to be not applicable?
Wait.
I think he means it's North American.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
Yeah.
Not a Euro film. No subtitles.
Like Mexico. Right. Euro film. What? Whose turn is it?
Dingus, what is your number two?
What's happening? Are we still talking?
We're not recording. Don't worry about it, Kelly.
Thank God. I feel bad for listeners.
All right, my number two burping movie, bodily function movie of video games. Hmm. Number two, I'm going to give you guys a quote. I got that.
But it's not a movie.
Okay, so, oops.
Let him do it. He knows what he's doing.
Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
Prosmegma.
Wait, do it again?
Dingus, nobody... I'm muting Dingus's mic.
Tom knows what that means.
We'll do it live. All right, this movie will be called Age of Mythology. And I'm not sure if we're going to call it... if we're going to have anything to do with Titans in the actual poster, but I think it's just going to be Age of Mythology. And it's going to be directed by one Guillermo del Toro. And I think the three people that so far I'm trying to get as far as the deal is concerned are Michael Fassbender, Kevin Durant, and Zoe Saldana.
Wait, so there's going to be a Navi, the Angel Gabriel, and Hunger Strike. What was that guy's name? Sands, the Irish Hunger Striker. Dingus, wait, I don't understand your cast. Explain this.
There's no way for you to understand it. I am really annoyed with the way mythology has been treated of late, and I want
especially Christianity.
I want a huge epic mythology that really sort of gets it right, and I want a Battle of the Five Armies kind of a movie. And since Guillermo del Toro isn't going to do that anymore for Middle Earth, he can do it for our Earth. And so I love the game age of mythology, and I want huge gods and huge monsters. And my idea for the movie is each of these dudes. Zoe Saldana, not a dude, of course. She's Egyptian. Then those two can battle it out between Norse and Greeks. Thank you. you can choose whether Kevin Durant is Greek or Norse, or Michael Fassbender is Greek or Norse. And the thing is, they're all siblings, and they don't know it. But they all rule these separate countries and these races, and they have to unite them under the gods to rule the world. And this might take three movies, actually, so that's fine with me. But I want huge, I want epic, I want to use mythology and all these gods and monsters that have been given short shrift in movies like Clash of the Titans. And this will not be 3D. I want to make that clear right now. Those are the only people I've signed for it, and I think Guillermo del Toro will do a great job.
Can you make room in this for Ray Fiennes as Hades?
No, he's too busy bamfing. I can't do it.
Will this movie feature Fimbulwinter at the very end?
It will feature Fimbulwinter throughout. In fact, the audience will have little buttons they can push, and they'll be able to launch Fimbulwinter whenever they want.
Wow.
But no 3D, because that would be too...
There's no 3D, no...
Just unlimited Fimbulwinters. By the audience.
No, but I love the idea of utilizing. At first, I thought of trying to get Peter Jackson to do it. I would really like to use his talents, the things that I saw him do in the Lord of the Rings movies, which I really loved. But he seems to be so bogged down. And Guillermo del Toro was going to do The Hobbit, and then he finally quit it. And I want to see what he would do. And I want something big and epic. And I really love this RTS. It's one of the few RTSs I've ever been able to play well. Or play. And I love all these monsters and gods. So, yeah.
The beauty of Age of Mythology that I'd like to see in a movie, I think that Lord of the Rings did this well, is this idea of you've got just normal human soldiers juxtaposed to cool things like minotaurs and those Anubis creatures and the ogres and whatnot. Like that juxtaposition of normal troops and fantastic troops is great. The thing is that
what's the expansion?
Age of the Titans or no Titan
Atlantis.
Atlanteans or they it is something like that. Yeah. All right, Dingus, good. I'm glad you're getting some Fimbulwinter in there. And I also really like being able to say Fimbulwinter. I haven't been able to say that in a long time.
Oh, Fimbulwinter. Yeah. Is Sam Worthington in it?
Who is Sam Worthington going
to
play?
Why'd you have to say his name? I went to
How come? Because I summon him like a mythological god.
That's right. That's Kelly's god power, is to invoke Sam Worthington. Yeah.
You have Fimbulwinter, I have Sam Worthington.
Well, yeah, how come Zoe Saldana can be in it but not Sam Worthington, Dingus?
Fimbulworthington. Huh, Dingus?
Because one of them was good and one of them was not.
All right.
Good away.
Can we get Gemma Arterton in there?
You guys can beat me up all you want to about Avatar, but she was freaking great. She was great.
I wasn't even thinking of Avatar. She sees you. I was thinking of Clash of the Titans.
I was thinking of the Losers.
Yeah, Losers.
She's not in Clash of the Titans.
Gemma Arterton.
Yeah.
Zoe Saldana was great in Avatar, and I think she's very, very good. And I think in this, she will be great as the Egyptian goddess, or queen, rather.
All right. Okay.
She tapped into James Cameron's fetish for blue people.
Are you talking about the Krzysztof Kieślowski film?
Ah. No, I didn't see that one. I only saw red and white.
Is that really true, Kelly Wand? Because you missed the best one if you did not see blue.
You know, I'd seen two colors.
Blue is the best of the white.
White's all the colors, so you don't need to see blue after you've seen white.
Cause white does not have Juliette Binoche in it.
No.
You guys sound like the chick from Splice. Splice. Yeah, you're scaring me.
You mean Dren?
All right, my number two. I'm going to move on to my number two. My number two is a bit like Dinguses, in that this is hard sci-fi. But now I don't know a lot about sci-fi, but this to me seems like a setting every bit as rich as Dune, and it's a strategy game, so nobody's really going to know it. But it's a game called Alpha Centauri. It's a strategy game about different faction leaders colonizing an alien planet, and they have to deal with each other as well as this sentient native plant life, and even aliens who arrive on the planet. This might not even work as a movie. It might have to be like a TV series, because I think of things like Babylon 5, where you've got all these leaders of different factions talking with each other, and I think Alpha Centauri could work as that, except instead of being about, I don't know, a space station or some shadow creatures or whatever, this would be about colonizing a new world by either taming it or learning to get along with it. And in addition, all these people with different agendas. There's some very vivid characters in Alpha Centauri. Alpha Centauri is very character-driven. You know, each of the factions has a leader, and they're all distinct according to different types of gameplay, but they would also work very well as different types of characters. One of them is really in touch with, like, the planet's, the ecology of the planet. Another one is, she's like the warlord. There's the UN-type fellow. There's the research guy. There's the chairman of Morgan Enterprises, the big industry guy. And there's so much great writing in Alpha Centauri that I think Brian Reynolds, who wrote it, could definitely do a great hard sci-fi drama, kind of like Dune. So that's my number two.
It'd be the rich man's Avatar, too, because the ecology of the planet.
Exactly, exactly.
Right.
Yep.
Factions actually have motivations.
Yep.
Brian Reynolds, who did The Postman?
Ugh. That's Kevin...
Sorry,
your daughter. Sorry. Michael Clark Duncan is the money guy.
As Morgan, yes. So, you know, I should have thought more about the casting. I wish I'd given that more thought. Yeah.
Well, who would you have direct it?
Me.
Wow.
Okay. Awesome.
I would have said Hal Needham.
Can I play Alpha?
I think to direct this, I am going to get Philip Noyce.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Reaching deep.
You know what? It's going to be a first-time director, so suck it.
You mean Brian Helgeland?
What do you think of that? Oh, good Lord, no. I am going to have him do the script, though. What do you think of that?
I actually like that idea, and what was enjoyable, you know, forgive me, but what was enjoyable for this process was thinking about casting and directors, because I decided to make that part of my task, and then thinking about, well, so-and-so has never been in anything, or she's only been in that, or he's only been in this, and then realizing I was thinking exactly the way the establishment thinks, and that's why nobody ever breaks in who's interesting at all. They just recycle the same people over and over again, and they do, you know, mediocre jobs. And so, yeah, use somebody new. I like that.
Well, you know what?
You mean like Sam Worthington?
I'm going to take it back. I'm going to give this to, because it is a movie version of Alpha Centauri can be very talky. Because it's character-driven, you know, you need occasional shots of the planet, and it's got this pink fungus. It would have a very distinct, weird look to it. It would totally pwn Avatar as far as visuals. But a lot of the movie would be just characters talking. So I am going to get Oliver Hirschbegel, who's a German director who did Downfall, who did this terrible but kind of ambitious, at times admirable remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and who most recently did 5 Minutes of Heaven. So I'm going to get him to do almost a parlor room drama presentation of Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri. Right.
Huh. I like that. I like what you're thinking. Good.
Is the movie turn-based?
It's not in 3D. I'll tell you that much.
Wait, 5 Minutes of Heaven. What's this got to do with Christopher Atkins?
I don't, is that the guy from Blue Lagoon? What does that even mean?
He made a movie called A Night in Heaven, where he's like a gigolo.
The Blue Lagoon dude?
Yeah, I thought you liked guy movies with pretty men. Because you're a Paul Walker fan.
It has to be a bromance.
All right.
So far, the best candidate for a movie in 3D is Kelly Wan's Roller Coaster Tycoon movie.
Well, it's not in 3D.
All right. I just wanted to think about that, Kelly Wan. We could make 3D a selling point for that.
Because 3D is when the game started to jump the shark. When they made the game 3D, it started to suck.
Ah, good. Okay.
Remember?
I actually liked the one in 3D.
That's them not knowing. No.
Yes, I did.
They just made it about the roller coaster.
I did, too.
You couldn't crash the rides anymore. That was the whole point of the fun beginning game.
Are you sure you couldn't? In the 3D version, Roller Coaster Tycoon 3, you couldn't make the rides fly off the rails? I'm pretty sure.
I couldn't.
Okay. You might be right. Maybe. You know what? I know you're wrong, Kelly Wan, because I've seen some pretty dramatic wipeout videos. On
crashes?
Yeah.
All right, maybe I'm dumb. So, if I'm dumb, I'll eat crow.
No, we're going to just make your movie in 3D, whether you like it or not. It's a creative decision we're forcing on your movie.
That's a bitter defeat, too, having my movie made.
What's your number two?
I'd rather eat crow.
Let's see if you can maintain your creative integrity for your number two pick. What do you got for us?
All right. My number two pick for movie video game pick is Top Spin 2 with Judy Landers and Betty White. That's tennis players. No, I'm just kidding. That's not my real
one. I wrote it down. It's too late.
That was a joke. No. Wait, this is way better. Okay.
He always has a 2.5.
True.
I have an awesome fake one later, but let's get to the real one for now. My real number two is Ms. Pac-Man with Bette Midler, and Pac-Man is played by Ted Danson, and the four ghosts are Sean Penn, Benicio del Toro, Jack Nicholson, and Ted Knight, and Ted Knight's ghost goes,
Is he having an orgasm?
Yeah, usually.
I want to tell you, Kelly Wan, when I told my wife about this 3x3, she immediately said Pac-Man 2, so that's where you are.
Ah, see, me and Wendy telling
you. She said Ms. Pac-Man, sorry. Go ahead.
Wow.
Beauty pageant winner, see? I connect with beauty pageant winners.
Kelly Wan, is there no Pac-Man movie? I guess there are cartoons. Like,
there's a show.
Okay.
Bob Hoskins has to be.
Yeah, I think there's a with Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo.
Ugh. I never saw that. And Dennis Hopper.
That's right. Ouch. Too soon.
Yeah, too soon. Did you see that? Remember when Pauline Kael said Bob Hoskins looked like a testicle?
Wow, that's awesome.
Tough room. Well, that's my number two. My number one's about that good.
Okay, all right, save it. So, Dingus, what's your number one video game that should be a movie?
Are we already back to me?
You bet.
Yeah.
Aren't we going to push Kelly on his... All right.
Are you going to be able to get all that talent? How are you going to attract him? It's going to have to be quite a script. You have some big names in there. Bette Midler, I'm sure she doesn't come easy.
I worked on the Jumper video game, so I can pull some stuff.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I reviewed the Jumper video game, by the way.
Yeah. What'd you give it?
4.6.
Oh. I'm owed a bonus.
All right, Dingus, what's your number one before Kelly and I come to blows?
Oh. No. Yeah. Hot.
All right, I'm going to give you my poster tagline for my number three, or my number one. This was easy for me. You ready? Mm-hmm. Finally, a woman who can take out James Bond.
All right. It's definitely a Raiders the Lost Ark game.
So Kelly Wan, I just know Dingus's three, I think, are the only three video games he's really played.
Right.
That's what he did.
E.T.? What is it?
No One Lives Forever.
Hold on.
It's not.
I thought of that one. That's kind of like picking it, is thinking of it. First step is picking it.
So this is the one that immediately came to mind. I think this video game just totally lends itself to being a movie.
But didn't they make it as Austin Powers with Elizabeth Hurley?
And they did the wrong thing. They should make it as Nolf. They should make it as No One Lives Forever with an actual female super spy, or rather ex-cat burglar.
Played by?
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Here's the thing. I'm going to try this. This is who I want to play it. I'll tell you who I want to play Kate Archer first, and then I'll. Well, no. First of all, I think I'm going to have J.J. Abrams direct it.
Big mistake.
Well, I really liked Alias. I liked a lot of Alias, but I can't really revisit a lot of that. And I really liked what he's done here and there. And I think he could do it. I'm not sure. I'll be willing to entertain other directors.
Awesome. Okay.
You like that endorsement?
Yeah, here and there.
All right, here's my idea for... I've got two ideas for stars, but here's my one that I'm not sure you guys are going to approve as a studio. But I think I want Kate Archer to be played by Portia Doubleday.
Chick from Arrested Development?
And Youth and Revolt.
Youth and Revolt.
Oh, wait. Oh.
I know all my Portia.
Yeah. So not the chick in Arrested Development. So...
And the last
the one who I said looked like Veronica Cartwright, and you guys laughed until I proved it.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That's the stupidest thing you've ever said.
And then I proved it, and you guys both had to eat crow.
Now I agree with
I will
you.
Feed you more crow, no Kelly Wand, if you want me to. I will feed you crow. I will make you...
No one's ever masturbated to Veronica Cartwright. Michael Cera wouldn't have put on a mustache to nail Veronica Cartwright.
So Dingus, is this the choice you want creatively, that you think the studio is going to say, no, we need someone bigger?
The person I had a real hard time with this. I kind of would like Rachel Weisz, but I don't know where to put this character as far as age is concerned, and I want this to be a franchise. and so Portia Doubleday, I don't know if she can do the accent. I want the accent.
Her name consists of two franchises right there.
But I like the way she looks, and I like her attitude. And I think she could pull it off. But I really like Rachel Weisz as an actor, and I like how she gets humor. And I think that's an important part of this character.
What's her name again?
Rachel
Kate
Weisz.
Archer?
Is it not Weisz? Why are you going Weisz? Why are you suddenly all Euro?
Because I am so Euro, you don't even believe it. That's how her name is pronounced.
You don't just say Weisz, it's Weisz. Really?
No, I do not.
I thought it was pronounced Veronica Cartwright.
Dingus, I'm afraid as one of the three hosts of this podcast, I'm going to have to demand that we get Rachel Weisz on this. I would love to see her as the anchor in an action movie kind of thing. Like, I'm so over the Angelina Jolie stuff. Whatever, she's hot. Yeah, she's confident. Fine, but I would love to see someone like Rachel Weisz. At the forefront of an action movie. I just love that idea. Her as an action heroine. I'm enamored.
I would love that too. I just don't want to see her become Kate Beckinsale. I really, really like Rachel.
But how could she possibly become Kate Beckinsale? It could never happen.
Even Kate Beckinsale can't.
Because she's just in those silly underworld
movies.
And I don't want her to get pigeonhole Matt, because I think she's a genuinely great actress.
You don't
want to
pigeonhole Kate Beckinsale?
Whoa.
I don't want to pigeonhole Rachel Weisz.
But I
love her, and I would like to see her do that. I don't know how old the studio is going to let me go, and I don't really know where to place this character age-wise. So that's why I sort of had both of those. I had a younger version and an older version that I would go with.
Now, can we get...
Is this period piece?
You know, I'm not sure about that either. I think that the 60s are the best place to place this, but I don't want it necessarily to be campy the way Austin Powers, and I'm afraid that we'll have those connotations if we place it in the 60s.
Can we get Darren Aronofsky to direct? With his wife Rachel Weisz as the lead.
Oh, nicely done, Tom. Maybe.
I just want to float that out there.
Do you think he could do it? Do you think he
would love to see? You know what? Whether or not he can do it is beside the point, because I would love to see him try. However it turns out, I'm there.
Is he still making RoboCop?
I don't think so.
With Rachel?
No.
All right.
So anyway, Nalt is definitely my number one choice without a question. As soon as you said
she's a real MILF, that Nalt girl.
That does not work, Kelly Wand. You're just throwing acronyms now.
Yeah. I don't know what words mean.
All right, I'm going to do my next one. Ready? Mm-hmm. So we all love zombie movies, of course, and there are now so many different kinds of zombie movies. You know, Zombieland is a romantic comedy zombie movie, and then you've got some zombie movies that are played for a laugh, like a lot of Shaun of the Dead. One thing missing, though, I think, from zombie movies, and something that I've only seen in a game that is a real homage to the original George Romero movies, but also adds its own sort of unique twist. There's a game called Dead Rising that was made in Japan. And what Dead Rising brought to the zombie genre is this sense of the zombies as playthings. Now, this wasn't the way I would put it. I actually heard this from the producer of the series, a fellow from Japan. I was at a press event, and he was asked why the game didn't do so well in Japan. And he said it's because we treated the zombies as playthings, and that doesn't really play that well in Japan. At least it didn't back then. But in Dead Rising, you don't so much have the sense that one little bite from a zombie will kill you or turn you, because that would make for difficult gameplay. So the zombies, you know, you've got hit points, and they're chomping on you, and you push them away, and you survive. So there's this sense that because they're not so immediately lethal, that they're slow, shuffling monsters that you can easily kill. So the game is about wacky, fun ways to kill the zombies. And the zombies almost become your partners in this playground, in this gory, R-rated playground. And there's a real sense of playfulness about it. So that's one thing that I would love to see in a zombie movie. And another thing that Dead Rising does is, although it has an earnest storyline, the protagonist in the game, and he's a standard sort of tough guy, he's a war photographer, you're in a shopping mall, and you can go into any store and put on the clothes from that store. So if you want, and you probably will want to, because in video games you can do all kinds of things you wouldn't do in real life, if you want, you can go into a lady's store and put on a red dress, and then get a nice pair of cowboy boots, and then put a traffic cone on your head, and then wear a Groucho Marx nose and glasses, and then you can run around and chop up zombies with a katana. The game allows the protagonist to be utterly ridiculous, and I love that. And I wish more movies would embrace that. I remember in one of the Terminator movies, I think it was Terminator 3 or whatever, where Arnold Schwarzenegger goes into a gay bar, I think, and he demands a pair of, like, the clothes from someone, and he gets these goofy-looking glasses, and I so hoped he would wear those for the rest of the movie, because it would have looked ridiculous. Gary Whitta mentioned when he was writing Book of Eli, he originally thought of the character of Eli as wearing a sort of a silly-looking fur hat to keep himself warm, but Denzel Washington vetoed that because it looked a little ridiculous. I would have loved for Eli, a blind man, to wear a goofy-looking hat because he doesn't know that it makes him look silly. One of the best moments in one of the best action movies of all time is in Big Trouble in Little China when Kurt Russell kisses Kim Cattrall. And he kisses her after she's been captured and made up, and then he gets lipstick on his mouth, and he turns to the lead villain, and he's doing all this tough guy talk, unaware that he's wearing lipstick. I just love an action movie that lets its protagonist look ridiculous. So that's something that Dead Rising brings to the zombie genre, the sense of zombies as playthings and a protagonist who can look utterly ridiculous. And I want to see those two things in a zombie movie, and it's going to have to be a Dead Rising zombie movie. So there you go. That's my number one.
Well, Zombieland flirted with that a little, but none of them were ridiculous, I guess.
You know,
Woody Harrelson.
It did. I mean, you know, and Jesse Eisenberg was, neurotic, and so
Bill Murray was ridiculous.
Yeah, it did flirt with that. Yeah, and there was even a little bit of the zombies as playthings in a way. So it's getting there. Yeah, you're right. I grant you that.
Did you guys see
the dude in The Quiet Earth wears a slip? You didn't like that?
You know what? You're right, Dingus. That is an end of the world thing where he does wear a dress. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
But no zombies per se.
Well, it's just I think I rewatched today 28 Days Later, and this is something that I'd often thought about, and I love this. I would have liked to have seen it pushed further, but in 28 Days Later, Cillian Murphy wakes up after having had surgery on the side of his head, and in the first, 30 minutes of the movie, one side of his head is shaved, and the other side isn't, because he, you know, it's where his head was shaved to get the brain surgery, and he looks ridiculous. It's awesome. So I've always thought, you know what? I think about this when I'm shaving. You know, I'm shaving, and let's say I'm halfway through shaving, and what if there's an earthquake, and then I have to run around and be survival guy after an earthquake, but I didn't have time to finish shaving, so that I've got half of a mustache or something.
Or you have shaving cream on you.
Well, that you would just wipe off, but then you would still have half of a mustache, you know. I'd like to see that more in my action heroes.
That's a Seinfeld joke. Kramer shows up like that during the Crazy Joe Davola episode.
What is
during the Pagliacci episode?
What does that mean? I understand some of those words you just said, but most of them I don't.
Kramer's been kicked in the head,
right?
And he comes over to talk to Jerry, and only half of his face has been shaved. And Jerry's like, "What are you doing? Are you joking? Come on, go fix it." And Kramer says, "What are you talking about?" And he's only shaved half his face. It's a great idea.
Was there a disaster or something? Why did he only shave half of his face?
He'd been kicked in the head by Crazy Joe Davola.
I don't know who that is. I don't know what that means, even.
The sad clown, Pagliacci. Oh, never mind.
But okay.
By the way, is Cillian Murphy also wearing his hospital gown?
He changes out of that fairly soon when he goes back to his home. But yeah, he's naked at first, of course. And then he puts on a hospital gown to wander around and yell hello and listen to "Godspeed You Black Emperor."
But when he's first out in the city, the first shots is he's in his hospital gown.
Yes,
right?
Yes. He wakes up naked, yeah, and then puts on a hospital gown, and that's where he wanders in the city and they're playing the "Godspeed You Black Emperor" music. Yeah,
that's good. I envy you watching that again.
I watched both of them today. I watched that and then immediately afterwards, 28 weeks later.
I like the second one more.
They're so different. I mean, they're both so excellent and great in different ways. And
I like the first one until they get to the military place, and then the black chick turns out to not be a badass anymore, and I thought that was lame.
Well, you know,
up till then,
I get what you're saying, going on, but he has weakened her, I think. Jim has weakened her. She's sort of succumbed. There's a transformation in her character right before they get to the blockade where she says, "You were right. There's more than just survival." And she kisses him on the cheek. He has basically broken her down, but softened her. So I agree with you that she changes, but that's why. And besides, they're surrounded by these British louts with guns, you know.
Yeah, but now Cillian Murphy's the badass, and she's not the badass.
Right.
I don't know.
But those movies are as different as Alien and Aliens, yeah, and I love them both.
Yeah. Did you guys see Tokyo Zombie? Japanese zombie movie? All right.
That's a big
one. I take that as a yes. just want to say, Japanese, way far ahead of us on porn, way behind us on zombie movies. That didn't sound racist.
Tokyo Zombie horrible? What is it?
It's based on a manga, so it's like... It's got moments.
You totally sold Tom on that.
That's all I had to say to make Tom check out.
Well, you know, oddly enough, Kelly Wand, who's pretty far advanced, not on only on zombie movies, but on Westerns, the Italians.
Yeah.
And I don't know where that came from.
Wait, what are you saying? I went, yeah, but I know what that is.
Well, you know, like the Fulci movies
Spaghetti
and
Westerns.
The Dario Argento. I don't know if Argento ever did any zombie movies per se, though. But that.
So their horror movies are bad, but their Westerns are good.
No. Their horror movies are, if you acknowledge that the horror movie genre is sometimes inherently bad, there are some fantastic Italian horror movies. Fulci zombie movies are instances of that. So they are, and there's one, I don't think it's a Fulci one, there's one called like City of the Dead with the zombies coming out of the airplane, which is just, that's so freaking inspired. I mean, it's a horrible movie, but it's so inspired. And I think it's a Fulci one where the zombie fights the shark. You know, it's just, they've got a guy in makeup in a pool basically grabbing the fins of some poor little beleaguered shark who's probably very disturbed by whatever's going on. And they clip it together to make it look like a zombie and a shark fighting, the Italians, their zombie narratives are way advanced. Yeah. So the Japanese have some catching up to do. I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Take that, Axis powers.
What's the Rupert Everett one?
Cemetery Man, and that's Italian as well. Della Morte. Very good, Dingus. Very, very good.
Wow.
Look at you, Dingus, with your zombie movie cred.
Ah, look, Dingus.
I love that movie. That was a great movie.
That was, yes.
I just couldn't remember if it was Italian or not.
Yeah, yeah, very Italian. Yeah. Good. Very good. All right, so there's my number one, Dead Rising. Dead Rising with a ridiculous protagonist and fun with zombies. All right, Kelly, how are you going to top that?
I'm going to play us out like Sting did Bill O'Reilly. Okay. I'll give you a quote.
Okay.
Boop.
It's Pong?
Yeah. Okay, so it's Pong.
This was your list. This was your list.
Doesn't mean it has to be good. I like other people's lists. I'm an idiot. All right, so that's your review of what I'm already saying. You're right. You're pretty smart, because it's going to get worse. Okay, it's Pong.
That's the tagline.
It's 3D. It's shot in IMAX, but it's in black and white. Coen Brothers, all in slow-mo. There's two paddle characters. One's Vern Troyer. The other one's Jamie Kennedy. One of them's poor. One of them's rich. There's a golden lake in a cave, and there's a cork in it. That's my number. Pong.
That's awesome.
Okay, runners up. I had Guillermo del Toro's Coldcept with Jet Li, and Street Fighter, a remake of the Street Fighter movie, but Raul Julia role being reprised by Jean-Claude Van Damme, because he's got that bump on his head that looks like a video game injury.
Who does? Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Yeah, he has a weird bump on his temple. It's very distracting every time I see a Van Damme movie, because he's got this big bump, like a pineal gland from beyond.
Oh, ouch. Wow. You should see someone about that.
Study Jean-Claude Van Damme's head sometime, Tom. I think you'll be glad.
I'm not a big phrenology guy.
Nice. You're missing out. But I like you for saying that. Did you guys have any runners up?
You know what? I didn't. I was trying to...
Hard just come up with three, huh?
Well, it was hard because what I wanted to do was do things that hadn't been done in movies. I mean, so many things.
Oh, you put thought into it.
I did.
Well, that's not what I had in mind. You guys totally failed.
Well,
except for Dingus.
It really was. You know, looking at my shelf of games, it's like, yeah, well, that's already been made a movie. It's not named after the game, but that's a movie.
Uh-huh, you keep your games on a shelf like books. Nerd.
I meant the box that I'm about to throw out at the curb. I've gone through that box. I don't keep those things. Where do you keep your video games? What are you talking about?
Well, I borrowed most of mine from you. So they're like bio, living.
Thing is, do you have a shelf of video games that you surveyed? Oh, you have a shelf. You have on your shelf of video games, Age of Mythology, No One Lives Forever, and Flower, right?
Right. Yeah, in that order. Just in case a 3x3 comes up, he needs them.
Actually, no.
I've got Rock Band there, too. Rock Band is on my shelf.
That's not a game.
That's true.
And it's not music.
Not a game. And I know for a fact Dingus has been playing Brutal Legend.
The Rock Band is to games what the creature in Splice is to genetics. It's an abomination with a stinger.
That's excellent, Kelly Wand. All right, so next week, Kelly Wand, what is our three? Or no, who's our three? Dingus, what is our 3x3 next week? Is it me?
One of you.
It's me. Stop it.
I wasn't ready. I was going to do your three favorite movies.
Well, mine's not far from.
Oh, great. Uh-oh. Is this really not a good one, Dingus?
No, this is going to be one of your groans.
Oh, God. Should I mute the...
Tom groans at all of them, though, so that's not a good
idea. That's not entirely true. It's large.
Nah,
not entirely true.
You're groan-centric.
I am. All right, Dingus, make me groan. What do you got?
Yeah.
Make me groan. Please don't say that.
Please don't repeat it. You could have just moved past it. You're the one that highlighted it, freak.
Well, Kelly's one, and I'm not flipping Kelly's one entirely, but I couldn't help it when I was thinking about it. So it's just going to be your three most effective adaptations. It doesn't have to be video games. It can be – I was going to just do novels, but I'm just going to open it up. Because I've got a couple that I really, as I was thinking about this, and I took it seriously, Kelly, I thought about what makes a good adaptation. And in deference to Tom, I'm not talking about faithfulness here. It doesn't have to be faithful adaptations. But I'm talking about most effective adaptations as far as you're concerned. So that's it.
So Super Mario Brothers was one of the movies you were thinking of when you thought of this topic.
Exactly. And Street Fighter was another. But it's not confined to video games, and so I'm just going to go ahead and take this off the table, since sooner or later Kelly Wan's going to do it anyway.
Yeah, you're right.
All right.
Smart man.
Good. I've already got a few in mind. As a matter of fact, you know what?
Tom, Tom didn't groan.
Oh.
He, inside, he did. Next week he'll say, oh, I hate this one. It's more about us.
It was a silent groan.
Now, the Dinkus ones are always broad and, like, you know, there's a lot of room to maneuver.
Silent groan.
I think the word you're looking for is loose and sloppy.
Oh.
That's me.
Just the way I like it, Tom.
All right, so next week, join us for our three most effective adaptations, 3x3.
And
we will be seeing the A-Team, which is a...
Yay!
Now, see, it's a groaner, but it's directed by Joe Carnahan. Come on.
He sucks.
I dare you. Narc?
What is he good? Oh, Narc
is great. Narc isn't just all right. Narc is great.
It's going to be just like Narc.
But Smoking Aces is non-terrible. It's not great, but I would say it's not necessarily terrible. There are some really cool things in Smoking Aces. Yeah.
How does it compare to the last 5 minutes of Valkyrie?
Joe Carnahan had nothing to do with that. What are you talking about? What do you want about?
I don't know.
It's got to be better than the last 5 minutes of Valkyrie, all of the A-Team.
Mm. All of World War II is better than the last 5 minutes.
True.
The Holocaust is better than...
Ouch.
Okay, stop.
Ooh, ruined. Too far. Boundaries. Envelope.
So are you guys really... You're just down on... I don't know. I'm kind of excited about it. I mean, I like Charlton Copley. Liam Neeson. I like Liam Neeson in Taken as, like, an action guy, you know?
It's got the guy from The Hangover. Anyway, I like...
Oh, and I like Bradley Cooper. That's right. I forgot about Bradley Cooper.
And Jessica Biel's in it. And a young Mr. T, though. That's the only part I'm getting snagged on. Like, Mr. T is... You can't imitate Mr. T.
So they're just doing a whole different thing, it seems. I don't know. I haven't really watched the trailers. But, yeah, I forgot. I like Bradley Cooper. Don't you guys like Bradley Cooper?
They specialize in the ridiculous. Yeah, yeah, I like Bradley Cooper. The Hangover's awesome.
Oh.
It's underrated, if anything.
Bradley Cooper's best performance is in Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis.
Look
that up on the internets. All right, so join us next week. We'll be here to talk about the A-Team and our three most effective adaptations. I am Tom Chick. I am joined by Christian Marskowy. Christian Marskowy.
Christian Marskowy.
Ah, cut the jibba-jabba.
Close. And Kelly Wand.
I love it when a plan comes together. What do you get when you cross a gorilla with a computer? A hairy reasoner.